Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. Today we go back to the story of five babies who were worldwide celebrities in the 1930s, the Dion quintuplets. Simon Watts reports.
It's May the 28th, 1934. In the tiny Canadian farming community of Callander, incredible news is spreading.
It was in the morning. We were on our way to school, and my girlfriend lived next door to Dion's. She stopped in and told us there were five little babies born next to her home there.
Yvonne Boyce remembered the day for the rest of her life.
So we were all very excited. My mother said, "It can't be." I said, "It can't be." We couldn't believe it. Five babies, one mother. So away we went. We walked a whole mile. We looked at the babies from the back window. It was fabulous.
This was the first time in recorded history that quintuplets had all survived. Within days, the world's media were descending on the parents, Elzire and Olivier Dion, including reporters from British Pathé.
Pictures you have all wanted to see, taken at the humble Dion farmhouse in Ontario's isolated bush, the home of the world-famous quintuplets. See them lying there, sleeping peacefully to gain strength. The tiny mites, whose combined weight at birth was 13 pounds 6 ounces, are well cared for. This is the only posed photograph of Mrs. Dion and her five daughters, Cecile, Yvonne, Marie, Emily, and Annette. The proud father wearing cap is shown with the priest who baptized the children. Nice work, old man.
That wasn't nothing.
Before fertility treatment, the chances of quintuplets were 1 in 54 million, and the chances of them surviving much higher still. To a world struggling through the Depression, it seemed miraculous that the first set had been born in the middle of nowhere.
The quintuplets were born in Callander, which is in the true north of Canada, and it was largely French-Canadian populated. People were very poor.
Ellie Tesher, columnist for the Toronto Star and author of The Dions.
The parents already had five children in a very plain wooden farmhouse without electricity, no heat, no light, and no indoor plumbing. The father subsisted on what little farming he could do in hardscrabble land.
Credit for keeping the babies alive went to the local country doctor, Alan Defoe. Born 2 months premature, the tiny quintuplets could each fit easily in the palm of a hand. To keep them alive in the run-down farmhouse, Dr. Defoe put them in a basket on the door of a stove.
Babies were born at dawn. The neighbouring women came in to assist. We had plenty of troubles. No clothing for the children. We had to tear up blankets and sheets to cover them. And their first beds were the butcher's meat basket, and heated by warm blankets and cloths. No heat apart from that of an old kitchen stove. We had difficulty keeping the black flies and mosquitoes off these children.
Dr. Defoe thought he knew best. Fearing germs, he wanted to get the babies out of the farmhouse and away from their parents.
This is Ontario, which is English Canada, as opposed to Quebec, which is very close to the border. And these are French Canadians who've moved over to Ontario because of the land. And there is snobbery. There's no question that there's a divide. And the father made a fatal mistake when the children were born, and he's so completely overwhelmed by what's going on with all the world's press coming at him. A couple of Chicago hucksters offer a $100 deposit for him to sell the children to be on exhibit at the World's Fair. And he goes to his local priest, who thinks this is a good idea if he can get 7% for his church. And so he agrees to it. But the press got a hold of the fact that the father was about to have the children exhibited. And that's when the Ontario government steps in and says, oh no, they can do better, and effectively does the same.
The Ontario government helped Dr. Defoe set up a state-of-the-art nursery, complete with incubators and round-the-clock nursing. As international interest continued, the doctor became a celebrity, and millions of North Americans began arriving in Callander to see the adorable brown-eyed babies.
And still they come, from all over Canada and USA, to gaze through glass screens at the world's most famous five-of-a-kind. These little girls, despite their fame and fortune, are quite normal youngsters. They are Emile, Annette, Yvonne, Cecile, and Marie. But don't expect me to point out each one. They're too much like peas in a pod.
Such was the interest that a security fence was built around the nursery and special observation decks were introduced. It became known as Quintland.
Quintland was really the forerunner of Disney World. There were two or three showings a day with, you know, a huge clock and times. People lined up, and then the five little girls were brought out. They were absolutely adorable, and they were guided as to how to play and cavort. They were dressed impeccably, always alike, of course. Quintland was a thriving circus-like atmosphere.
The Ontario government took a percentage of ticket sales. It profited, too, from the advertising deals which the Quints attracted.
There were these gorgeous dolls that were made out of porcelain that rivaled the dolls that, you know, Shirley Temple was so famous for. Every child had to have these dolls. Clothing, blankets, toilet paper, everything. Napkins, cutlery, dishes, everything had quintuplet faces or Quintland insignias.
Quintland closed in the 1940s when the babies grew up and World War broke out. The Quints were sent back to their parents, but the family were unable to bond after 9 years of estrangement. At school, the Quints were clearly different, as their classmate Connie Vachon recalled.
They had just been alone. They didn't know any other children. They would ask us questions like, do you have dates? Do you have a boyfriend? What do you mean go and have a soda? You know what I mean? So we had to explain everything you do. And many times I felt there was a subtle strangeness.
Two of the Quints died young, one of epilepsy, the other in a possible suicide. The remaining three struggled to have happy family lives and disappeared from public view. When they reappeared in 1998, they were virtually penniless, and a campaign was launched to demand compensation for the money the Ontario government had made out of Quintland.
When they appeared before the press, people were just stunned. Anybody who knew anything about the story, and most of us had learned about it in school growing up, couldn't believe that these children that had been such celebrities were in dire straits, poverty and ill. Everybody rallied. Popular opinion was such that these three women deserved compensation. And that's when I determined that I would crusade on their behalf until they got full compensation. And each was awarded $1 million each and a full government inquiry.
At around this time, the surviving Quints gave a joint interview to the BBC. It was clear how much they regretted not having a normal childhood.
I think it's a difficult experience, and it's not easy to express. It's a tough life.
What was the first time you remembered seeing your mother?
At the nursery.
Through a window.
Did you understand why?
No. Within. We were unable to understand. We could miss mother because we had never had been in her arms. We can miss her.
How does that make you feel now?
Well, I do think it was not normal. Mm. The things we miss, I think, were very important, like love, happiness, a family who wants us.
Since that interview, another one of the Quints has died. In their hometown, Quintland may no longer exist, but there is a museum dedicated to the most famous little girls in the world.
Witness was written and presented by Simon Watts. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.